All right, we're beginning here on the bottom of Yud Bet, Amud Bet, by the Mishnah. Matzah Shterei Chov. He finds documents, loan documents, out on the street. Im yesh behen achrayut nechasim. If they contain within them a lien on property, lo yachzir. Don't give them back. Shebeit ni nifrayim mehen. Because Beit Din will utilize or accept such contracts. So if you hand it back to the party, that party then will be able to collect against the debtor who the credit line or the document is written against. Ein behen achrayut nechasim. On the other hand, if they do not have a lien, yachzir, you can give it back. She'ein Beit Din Yifrayim mehen, because Beit Din won't utilize or accept these contracts. So, divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says you give it back when the contract has no meaning, basically. But if the contract has meaning, then you can't give it back, because then you're risking giving it to the wrong party. Obviously, in returning it, you have two choices of whom to return it to. You can return it to the creditor, or you can return it to the debtor. If you return to the creditor, he'll be able to collect with that document. So what Rabbi Meir says is, if it has a lien built into that document, do not give it back to the creditor, because then he could take it to Beit Din and collect. And we'll have to figure out why or what he's worried about, but there's a reason not to give it to the creditor, because we assume that maybe it's been paid back, or something has already transpired that we don't want him to collect again. The other hand, if it has no achrayut nechasim, if it does not have a lien in it, then he says, fine, give it back to the creditor, because Beit Din will not honor that contract, and therefore giving it back to the creditor doesn't change the dynamics of the case. V'chachamim amrim, ben kach u'ben kach lo yachzir, mipnei she'Beit Din nifrayim mehen. V'chachamim basically say what you are suggesting. Why shouldn't Beit Din honor these contracts? They have different dinim, which is that when you have a lien in the contract, then you have a right that supersedes people who purchase property from this individual after the loan was extended. When you have a contract or a credit document without achrayut nechasim in it, then it doesn't supersede any of those buyers, but it's equivalent of what we'll call a milveh al peh. It has the same status as an oral loan because it just documents a loan but doesn't add any benefit to the creditor. Remember that they don't have a registry. So we've said many times that the way that you notify people that the land has been bought is through a contract. The contract has a kol, right? It becomes well-known or public knowledge. And so because of that, people know to be aware or beware of the fact that this person has loans outstanding and not to buy from their property. But again, that's only applicable when there is achriyut nechasim. Gemara says, b'mayaskinan, what exactly is the scenario here? This is your question. Why would it be that you wouldn't give a document back or Beit Din wouldn't honor it? So the answer is, ilema kishechayav modeh. If it's a case where the debtor admits to the fact that there was such a loan outstanding, kiyesh ben achriut nechasim, amai lo yachzir. Then why shouldn't you give it back? Even if there's a lien built into the document, why not give the document back? It's the right thing to do. The debtor agrees that this loan was taken out, that he owes the money. And of course, the creditor has a right of collection, so why not give him back the documents so that he can collect with them? Hamoda, the debtor agrees to the fact that it's outstanding. V'kisha ain't chayav modeh, if the debtor denies that there was such a loan outstanding, ki ain behen achriyut nechasim amayachzir, then when there is no lien in it, why would you give it back? The loan might not have existed at all. So what right do you have to give it back to the creditor when the debtor denies any such thing existed? Nehilo gabi mishabde. Again, that document may not let him to collect from encumbered property. But when it comes to free and clear property, he can use this document to collect from the debtor. So if that's the case, why would you return it to the creditor? So you have two choices. You have either the debtor agrees that what's written in the document is true, and then no matter what the document says, you should give it back to the creditor, because the debtor agrees. If the debtor disagrees and says no such loan was ever extended, then why should you give any document back to the creditor? You're empowering him by giving him the documents back. Mar says, Olam kishechayav modeh. Now the case in our mission is a case where the debtor agrees. V'halcha haynu taima. This is what the reasoning is. D'chashinan shema katav lo vot b'nisan v'lo lava ad tishrei. They wrote in the document he went to borrow money starting in Nisan at a much earlier time, but then he only actually took the loan out in Tishrei, 6 months later. Va'ate the mitzvah lekuchot shelo kedin. So now we have basically a predated document, because the document says the date of the loan is back in Pesach time in Nisan. Meantime, he only took out the loan in Tishrei. So as far as the purchasers of property are concerned, anybody who bought their property prior to Tishrei should not be subject to a clawback of their property because they bought it before the loan was extended. The way Tosfot describes it over here, v'lo lavat Tishrei perish, v'ata rotzeh levot bo. Now he wants to utilize it. Sheyesh lo torach lichtov shtar acher. It costs them money. It's difficult to get another shtar put in place. V'gam kedei l'arviach shitei desafra. So he doesn't have to pay the sofer again. Can't say that he already borrowed the money before it fell. Tim Kain, my Mishani, in a second, the Gemara is going to say, Hani Rei, there's some negative associations with the shtar because it's on the ground. So what do we feel? A person who is a creditor and has a document evidencing the fact that he lent money, he's going to be really careful with that document. He doesn't want to lose that document. The fact already that we're finding the document already casts aspersions on the efficacy of the document, because why isn't he taking care of it? Why did he let it get loose? So that already raises our suspicion about the document. So Tosfot says, if he borrowed the money no matter what, meaning that he said, the document says in Nisan, in the end he borrows it in Tishrei, then when he dropped the document, it doesn't make any sense. Because he would have kept the document, he would have been careful with the document, because the loan is outstanding. In the end, he did borrow the money. The fact that we're finding the document is evidence of him not being careful. So what we're thinking is, they originally wrote the document in Nisan, he didn't end up borrowing money. Now he wants to use that same document to borrow in Tishrei. And so that's when it falls, and that's what it's saying here, that Kishchayav Modeh, he agrees that he wants to borrow the money and use this document, so he's willing to give it or have it be given to the creditor. But we should suspect the document because we found it. That already makes it questionable as whether the loan was already outstanding or not, and whether we should believe this debtor as to the fact that he really owes the money. Because he's just trying to use the document again in Tishrei, and that's going to predate creditors' liens on his property, which would then cheat the buyers out who bought property between the time of Nisan and Tishrei. Iachi, if that's the case, kol shtarei da'atu l'kaman, nekashlu hu hachi. He says, wait a minute, if this is really a chashash, that people predate their shtarot, then why only in a case where we found the shtar out on the street do we start worrying about this? Any shtar that comes before us, we should start worrying about the fact maybe it was predated. Who knows that the loan was actually taken out at the time that it was dated. So it says, kol shtarei lo rei. Other shtarot don't have this negative aspect to them, which is that they were found on the floor. Hani rei. This one has this negative side to it. Now Rashi explains it, ho v'nafal itra. Since it already fell on the ground, that gives a negative association with the contract. Because if it was a good contract, the guy would have been much more careful about it. The fact that we're finding it already makes us suspicious that he doesn't really have a loan outstanding, and that's why we found the document, because he didn't care so much about it. Now, Tosfot points out, again, if he's already borrowed the money, then that's not an issue, because if he's already borrowed the money, then we shouldn't be finding the document. That's the basic point of Tosfot. Which is, if we're finding the document, it must mean that there's not a loan. If there's already a second loan out, and he did take the loan out in the end, we shouldn't be finding the document. So Tosfot says it's in between, meaning that he already has it dated back in Nisan, and he wants to use it now in Tishrei. So the loved basic, or the debtor basically says, yeah, it belongs to the creditor. In order to get into the hands of creditors, he can borrow money using this document. So to save a couple of shekel, he's willing to say, yeah, I have the debt outstanding, and then he gets the document in place, and he can borrow the money immediately. He doesn't have to redo all the contracting in order to get the loan done. So that's our problem here. Elahad etanan. But then what are you going to do with this Mishnah? Kotvim shtar l'loveh afopi she'en malveh imo. You're allowed to write a document for the debtor, even though the creditor is not present. Right? Obviously, the other way around you can't do. The sofer can't write something on behalf of the creditor when the debtor is not there, because it's to the detriment of the debtor. The creditor, of course, wants the document outstanding, and it's only to his benefit. So we wouldn't allow that. But the other way around, where the debtor is having the sofer write the document, even without the creditor, there he's obligating himself. And in obligating himself, we have no problem with that. I mean, that's his issue, that if he wants to obligate himself, let him put the document together. So Gemara says, l'chatchila, heichi katvinu. Wait a minute, how do we allow such documents to be written? Necho shema katav luvot b'nisan v'lo lavad tishrei. You have a problem here, then the sofer writes up the document. The debtor says, I want to borrow money, I need to evidence of this fact, go ahead and write a document. He writes it, dates it today, and then they sign, gets Edim to sign the document. Meantime, the debtor never uses it until 6 months later. He just has it in his back pocket in case he wants to use it. We should be suspicious of such documents. That would generate an earlier lien than is really necessary in this case because the money wasn't borrowed until much later date. So Amar Rav Asi solves that problem and says, Bishtare Hakna'a. We're talking about a specific type of shtar, Da Shabid Nafshei, which is that a shtar Hakna'a basically is the equivalent of, I would say, a credit line. It's an outstanding credit line that has to be drawn down on. That is that the lien is started immediately. The right to borrow is now started immediately. When he borrows is irrelevant to the lien because the lien is in place now. That's the equivalent of the modern day credit line, which is you have access to the borrowing and you've already encumbered your assets. The question is when do you draw down on the loan? And so that's what he's describing here. We're talking about a shtar hakna'a. In that case, we will allow the debtor go to the sofer and write it without the malveh, because even if he doesn't borrow the money immediately, the fact that the document is dated today means that the lien starts today. Since the lien starts today, there's nothing wrong with that document. That document's fine. The Rabbeinu Hananel explains, you can see this, he quotes in the name of Ashi instead of Rav Asi, but he says that the shtar hakna'a das shibed nafshei b'chalipin, that there's a shibud generated through a kinyan chalipin, and we don't worry about when the money is actually extended, meaning that through a kinyan chalipin, they generate the credit line and the lien, and then only later, when the money changes hands, that's when the loan is actually extended. But since the credit line started from that kinyan chalipin, that's when the lien starts, and there's nothing wrong with it. It says, Ihachi, Maktnitsa and Diktani, then now going back to our Mishnah, how are you going to understand our Mishnah? Im yesh behen achrayut nechasim, if they have a lien in them, lo yachzir, don't return it. V'ukimna, and we establish the case here, k'shechayav modet, that the debtor agrees to the fact that the loan is outstanding. U'mishum, shema ketuv luvot b'nisam, lo lavad tishrei. So what we were worried about was the fact that the document was predated, and here the debtor is trying to use this document, v'ati l'mitriach l'kucho shelo kidin, and then the lien will be too early on the document before the loan was extended, and then he'll take from those buyers that he doesn't have a right to collect from. Amai lo yachzir. Why not? Nechzei. Ibishtar hakna'a. Let's look in the document. Is the document a shtar hakna'a? Is it a credit line? Hashabid le nafshei. Then, of course, what's the problem? Because then the earlier date is the right date, and why do we mind giving it back? Ibishtar de lo hakna'a. If it's a shtar that is not the hakna'a shtar, lek le mechash. We don't have to worry about it at all. Damart, kilecha malve behadei lo kadvina. You just told us that Mishnah in Baba Batra that says that the debtor can write a document without the presence of the creditor is only in cases of a shtar hakna'a. It's only in cases of a credit line. So the only time we have to worry about these predated shtarot is in a case where it's a credit line. In the case of a credit line, it's okay because the lien happened at the time of the dating of the shtar. And if you find that the shtar is not a shtar hakna'a, then the sofer is not allowed to write it without the presence of the creditor. So without the fact that it was actually lent, he won't write it. So Mimanov Shach, you should be able to return the document because it's rightfully the creditor's and the date is correct. If it was a shtar hakna'a, doesn't matter that the creditor wasn't there. As soon as the document is put in place, the lien exists. And so what are you worried about giving it back to the creditor? Makes sense to give it back to the creditor. Let him collect with it. If it's a shtar that's not hakna'a, which means that we worry about the predating, you just told me that a sofer won't write the contract until he sees the loan actually being given. Rashi over here says, Kilekem alvo ba'adei v'notein ma'ot bifneihem v'lo katvina. Rashi adds that additional stage, which is that he has to witness the loan actually being given. So now we know that it's not predated because the sofer had to witness the loan. So Miman of Shach, give him back the contract and let the creditor collect with it because the debtor agrees that this loan is outstanding. So why would you not give back this document based on what our Mishnah says here that you wouldn't give such a document back? So Amalei Rav Asi, Afagav Dishtari Delav Akna'a Kilekem Malve Baidei Lo Katvinin. So you're right. There's nothing to worry about. Shtar Akna'a, we're fine. Shtar Shelo Akna'a, he wouldn't have written. So we should be fine. So despite that fact, Matnitan, Kevin de Nafal, Itrale. The fact that we're finding this document on the ground already makes us suspicious. V'chashinan, Dilma Akrei Bekotuf. Maybe it happened and he wrote it down. Meaning that there is a risk that a sofer did this, maybe even improperly, or he did it and then realized that there was a problem, and that's why we're finding it on the floor, because he was throwing it away, or it wasn't so important, he didn't think it was a real document, he tried to do it, and then he remembered that the malva wasn't there, and that's why we're finding this document. So there are, quote-unquote, suspicions about this document, that even though the sofer should not be doing this, and should not be writing such a document, the fact that we found it on the floor already makes it suspicious that this document, it doesn't meet all the standards that we normally have by a sofer. So that's Rav Asi's way of dealing both with our Mishnah, as well as the Mishnah in Baba Batra. Dealing with our Mishnah, he says that we are suspect about shtarot that are not hakna'ah. We're talking about shtarot that don't have this earlier lien or credit line type features to it. And the reason we're worried about it is because we're finding it on the ground. And that already raises our antennae about the fact that maybe something's wrong here. That explains our Mishnah. It's again a case where the debtor agrees that the loan is outstanding. We worry about the predating of the shtar, that he had a shtar that was earlier dated and then only used it at a much later date. Again, a shtar that should not have been written, but was written. The Mishnah in Baba Batra is talking about a shtar hakna'ah. And that Mishnah in Baba Batra allows you to collect, and we don't worry about predating because of the fact that it's correct to collect from the earlier date because there's an outstanding lien, because it is a shtar hakna'ah. Now, Abaye amar, edav b'chatumab zachin lo. That once the edim sign on the document, this is irrespective of whether it's a shtar hakna'ah or not, which is what he says here, afilu shtarei delav hakna'ah, even if it's not a credit line, even if it's really a document that evidences the debt, once the edim sign on it, that is what generates the lien. The lien is not generated whether it's a shtar hakna'ah or shlo shtar hakna'ah. The lien is generated once the edim have put their signatures on there. Probably because, as we noted before, that the reason that a shtar makes a difference is because we want publicity about the transaction so that buyers are aware of the fact that there's an outstanding credit or lien against this property. The edim are the mechanism by which that happens. So once the edim have signed on it, that already makes it a public issue, and people then are aware of the fact that somebody has an outstanding lien on this property. So again, we don't worry about when the actual money was actually borrowed. What we worry about is when did the edim sign on it, because that's when the document becomes a public document, or as if it's been registered, and now people know to be aware of the fact that there is outstanding debt against or lien against this property. Now, the next line in the Gemara is very difficult. It says, Mishum dekashale, because Abaye had a problem, kevin damart bishtari delav hakna'ah, because you said, Rav Asi, before, that when it's a shtar that's not hakna'ah, ki leta lamalve b'hadei lo katvinan, since the malve is not present, you don't write it, leka lamechesh, then you don't have to worry about a predated shtar, because you'll never have a shtar that the sofer writes before the actual date of the loan. Leka lamechesh de'ikrei v'kotuv. You don't have to worry about this strange incident where he actually just happened and he wrote it, or he went against the normal protocols and wrote it. Seemingly from this line in the Gemara, is that the reason Abaye is rejecting Rav Asi's position is because Rav Asi's position relies on this idea that a sofer went against normal protocols and wrote a contract that he shouldn't have written. And because of that suspicion, that's why in the Mishnah you can't give it back. Abaye feels that that is too far-fetched. You can't have a whole system based on this person violating protocol. And so for that reason, he thinks that that's the wrong answer and comes up with his answer. What the Rishonim and others point out over here is the fact that Abaye's position stands alone. Even without his question on Rav Asi, Abaye really believes that Edav b'chatumav zachinlo. It has nothing to do with Rav Asi. It happens to be now in the context of our Gemara over here, it solves the problem of Rav Asi in a different manner, but it's not what's precipitating Abaye's position. By his position has to do with the fact that, number one, Eidah b'chatumav zachinlo, and we're going to see a second, the other problems of Choshishin l'knunya or Choshishin l'pir'on. So by his position relies on those other features, nothing to do with Rav Asi. So many Rishonim believe that this line in the Gemara was added by the Geonim as an additional explanation to Abaye's position, but not as the core explanation to Abaye's position. It just explains why this solves the problem or relieves the problem that we have with Rav Asi's position, it's an explanatory piece, but it's not giving you the underlying reason for Abaye's position. And you can already see that in Tosafot, who asks about the correlation of Abaye's statement to the rejection of Rav Asi. In the end, he deals with it in the following manner. He says, "Yesh lamar mishum dekasha le'Abaye lo nechila yishnuya de Rav Asi." Because Abaye had a problem with Rav Asi's answer, he was not happy with that answer. But that's independent. Umiltu ba'apei nafshehi. It's a totally independent statement. It's not impactful on Abaye's position about the fact that Edim generate the lien at the time that they sign it or generate the effective date when they sign on it. So they're independent statements. They both are true, but there's no correlation between them. One is not explaining the reason for the other. But then what are you going to do with this Mishnah? If he finds a bill of divorce, he finds an emancipation document, daidiki, which is a tzavat shchemira, a last will and testament, matana, a document of gifting, bishovarim, or receipts for documents that were paid, harizel lo yachzir, don't give it back, shema ktuvim hayu, maybe they were written, vinimlach alehem shalolit tanim, and then he had regrets and decided not to give them, meaning that the debtor or whoever here is having the document drawn up on their behalf, then decides not to do this. Man decides not to divorce his wife after the get was written. The Adon decides not to free his slave. Or, in the case here of the Shovarim, the person was going to pay it back and then he was going to give a receipt. And then the debtor didn't pay back and he didn't give the receipt. B'chinim lach aleihem mayhavi. What does it matter that they changed their mind? You told us just now that the signatories are what make the document valid. So as soon as the Edim sign on the document, the divorce is done. As soon as they sign on the document of emancipation, the slave is now free. So why does it matter that they changed their mind? Changing their mind has no relevance once the Edim are signed on it. According to Abaye, it's the end of the line. The document is now effective as soon as the Edim sign on it. You're right. In some senses, retroactively, the signatories to the document make it effective when they signed on it. But that all is premised on this condition that it actually reaches the hand of the recipient. So if the husband is divorcing his wife, then when he gives the get to his wife, the effective date of the document is when the Edim sign on it. But until he gives the get to his wife, they are not divorced. Just because they signed the document doesn't mean the divorce is effective. Same thing with the slave's freedom. He's free from the time that the document was signed as long as the Adon gives him the document of emancipation. But if he never gives him the document of emancipation, he's never free to have an effective date that was earlier. So that's the condition of the Edim making a difference or being the effective date is only once the document is actually given. But if it never reaches the intended party, then it never goes effective. So there are two stages here. There is the effective date, and then there is making the document effective. So making the document effective requires that you actually give it to the party. The effective date then is determined by when the Edim signed the document. So that's why if the document did end up with the creditor, so then, it doesn't matter that it's dated before the time of the loan, because the effective date of the loan is when the Edim signed on the document. And so then we don't have any problem with the creditor having a lien date that is backdated in a sense, because that's when the Edim signed it. Once the Edim signed it, everybody knows that there's going to be a loan outstanding over here. When the actual loan was extended doesn't matter to us, as long as it was extended, as long as the money was given out. Tosfah points out over here that the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says that Echad B'Nisan is Rosh Hashanah LeMelachim, is the first day of the king's reign. And Rashi over there goes on to explain that the dating of documents would be difficult without having a fixed start date for all the kings that come to power. Because you would never remember every king which was their start date and when it turns over to the next year. And so therefore, they had a fixed date when he would change over to his second year or third year, so it would be much easier then to understand or know what the dating of the king's reign or the years of his reign were. That's what over here it says, I don't understand Rashi's explanation there for reasons that are mentioned in our Gemara, because both according to Abaye and according to Rav Asi, the effective date of the shtar is okay. The fact that it was written earlier is not a problem because that's when the lien is extended. And since neither of them worry about that, then why do we have to worry about predating? Tosfot goes on to explain that the issue is, if we didn't have a start date, then the Sofrim, if he came to power late in Adar, and then first Nisan was not a fixed date when the king would turn over his reign, then between a day or two, the Sofrim might get mixed up between whether it was the first year of his reign or the second year of his reign. So by using a fixed date of Chad B'Nisan, nobody's makes the mistake about whether it's the first or the second year of his reign. That's why they made Rosh Hashanah Menachim, in order to protect against such a mistake from being made. Rashi says, based on Abaye's position, then what does the Mishnah in Shvi'it mean when it says, Shtarei Chova Muktamim Psulim? When you have a predated shtar, it is problematic. Ve'amu Acharim, if it's a post-dated shtar, then it's fine. Now, for Rav Asi, that's not a problem, because he'll just set it up as not being a shtar hakna'ah. But for Abaye, how is he going to explain that Mishnah in Shvi'it? So Rashi answers, Taritz, Bimukdemet ktivatan chatimatan. It's a case where it's written prior to the signing of the document, meaning that the sofer writes it and predates it, and the edim do not sign on that day. And so then, if the edim or the signature of the edim is what makes it effective or the effective date, then the date on the shtar is mukdam, and it's actually predating the effectiveness of the shtar to create a lien because the date is prior to the signing of the shtar, which is the actual action that creates the effective date. Or, Rashi says, it could be just the whole shtar is false, which is a case where they're signing it in Tishrei, and then they predate the shtar as if it was written in Nisan. And so there, clearly, the predating of the shtar is incorrect because the effective date was in Tishrei and not in the previous Nisan. Ela Matznitin. Now, what are you going to do with our Mishnah? According to Abaye, what is the problem in giving the document back in our Mishnah? It's a case of Kishechayav Modeh. It's a case where the debtor agrees to the fact that the loan was extended. If he agrees the loan's extended, and according to Abaye, the signatories to the document make it that the defective date was the earlier date, then why not return the document to the creditor? What do you have to fear? It's not a predating, because the predating is not meaningful. The effective date was the date that the Edim signed on it, even that's before the loan was extended, and the debtor's agreeing to it. So that's the Gemara's question now. What about our Mishnah, according to this explanation? We already established that the Mishnah is Kishachayav Modeh. It's a case where the debtor agrees. Mushom Shema Katav Luvot B'Nisan V'lo Avad Tishrei. And we said that the worry here was this predating of the document. Bishlam Allah Rav Asi, for Rav Asi's explanation, Damar Bishtari Aknaita Mukila Bishtari Delo Aknaita, that when Rav Asi says the only time that the writing of a document is permitted without the malva there is in a case of a shtar hakna'ah, which allows for the fact that there is a lien extended, or basically a credit line extended from that point, and a lien exists from that moment, he'll explain our Mishnah in a case where it's not a shtar hakna'ah. The fact that it's not a shtar hakna'ah means that the predating would be problematic because the lien doesn't start until the money is extended. And therefore, if the sofer wrote it without the presence of the malveh, that would have been a violation of protocol and a problem. And that's what he says, Kedam Rinan. That's how he explained it. El Labaye Damar Eidav Bechatumav Zachino, that as soon as the Edim sign on it, the lien is generated, irrespective of whether it's a shtar hakna'ah or a regular shtar. I mean, really, for Abaye, it's hard to understand what the difference is between a shtar akna and a shtar, because for him, the lien always starts from the dating when the edim sign on it. So both a shtar akna and a regular shtar, as soon as they sign on it, that's when the lien begins. So ma'ika the meimar, then what are you going to say for Abaye to explain our Mishnah? What is the chashash in our Mishnah for returning the document? Amar lecha Abaye matznitin einu taima, and this is why, again, I mentioned to you before, the other Rishonim say that Abaye's position is not really premised on Eidav B'chatumav Zachinlo, but rather on this reason, Dachayish L'Piron U'L'Kununya. He is worried about repayment and collusion, that these are the problems that can come up. I mean, that you have a document now that's here. There are two possibilities of why this document is here. It either fell from the hands of the creditor or it fell from the hands of the debtor. We're not worried about predating. We're not worried about the lien being too early, because that, as soon as the Eidim sign on it, that's the effective date of the lien, and we're fine with that. So that's not our chashash. Our chashash is twofold. One is the fact that the debtor possibly paid the loan back, And he was in possession of the document. Creditor gave him the document back after he paid the money, and the debtor dropped it. If the debtor dropped it, then we are worried about the fact of giving it back to the creditor. But now, you said our Mishnah is a case of Chayav Modeh. It's when the debtor said the loan was outstanding. So now we know that there was no Pir'on. The answer is, maybe there was Pir'on and Knunya, collusion. Which is now, even though the debtor had paid it back, they basically get together and collude to grab property away from buyers who bought the property after the lien was extended. They say, yeah, I know you paid it back to me, but listen, if I give you the document back and you come and collect from me again and I have nothing to pay with, you go grab that land from those buyers and we'll split it after the fact. We'll collude to go take land away from these parties, these buyers that were there. So that's what we worry about, this knunya, this type of collusion. The possibility is also that the document was written falsely, meaning that forget about the fact that it really was a loan extended and paid back. You could come up with the case of collusion even in the case where there was never a loan outstanding. They wrote a false document, that document's a loan that never existed. And then you have knunya, you have collusion. So to give the document back is dangerous over here because you might be aiding and abetting individuals who are actually colluding, trying to take money away from the buyers. Ulishmuel damar lo chashin le pirion uluknunya. So that's a bias position. Shmuel has a position where he does not worry about pirion and knunya. He does not assume that people have paid back the document, and he assumes that there is no collusion. Now the reason being that Rashi explains over here is because Shmuel believes, it's going to be a couple of daf, we'll come up to it, that a person who finds a shtar, then you give it back to the owners or to the creditor, especially when the debtor agrees to the fact that the loan was extended, because what is the first thing a debtor does when he gets a document back? He rips it up. The fact that the document's still intact is pretty good evidence of the fact that the loan was not repaid. Because if the loan's repaid, the debtor does not want this document out there. It is too risky. Now, you said before, maybe he wants to keep it out there in order to save a couple of prutot, so he doesn't have to rewrite the document. That's what we said before, that maybe he really wrote the document earlier and now he wants to use it to borrow. That's only vis-a-vis an individual who is finding it and the Aveda. When they say an Aveda, maybe the guy was saving money and he wants to use the loan again. But for a debtor who came into possession of a document, there's no way to save a couple of prutot. He's not going to rip the document up and have the risk that he could be collected against again, that there's now an outstanding credit document that could actually cause him a lot of trouble. It's not worth keeping it around to save that couple of shekel. And so because of that, we would assume that the document is ripped up. The fact that the document's intact already makes it, or gives evidence to the fact that it was not repaid. The debtor agrees to it. So now you have to start worrying about collusion. That's the question. Do we worry about people making these things up or cheating in these situations? And so Shmuel says we don't worry about the knunya. We're not worried about people colluding, trying to cheat buyers out of their property. Partly because you have a deem sign on the document. So it's not just two people colluding. You need four people to collude over here because you need a deem to sign on a document. Now, even though technically the creditor and debtor can tell me, yeah, this happened and they're really innocent victims, they're just signing to a contract that both parties say that they agreed to. Still, there's a lot of people involved in this situation. So Shmuel believes that there is no knunya, that we don't worry about the knunya. So the Shmuel Amar Lo Yichashin Lepirion Uluknunya, Ma'ika LeMeimar. How is he going to explain the different Mishnayot over here? Hanicha Yisavar Like Rav Asi. If he owes like Rav Asi, it's not a problem anymore. Damar B'Shtar Hakna'a. Case in Baba Batra is a case of Shtar Hakna'a, and that's why you can write it without the Malveh. Therefore, Muki Matnitin B'Shtar Yidalav Hakna'a. He explains our Mishnah, a case where it's a Shtar that's not a Hakna'a, and we're worried about predating. By mistake, meaning that the Osofer did it incorrectly and predated the document. Ella isavar ke Abaye, if Shmuel holds like Abaye, demar idab bechatumav zachino, ma'ika the meimar. Then how are you going to explain our Mishnah? Our Mishnah only works because the way Abaye says that the effective date is always when they deem signs. So there's no worry about the fact that it was a predated shtar. What is the only worry in our Mishnah? Koshishin the Pir'on uknunya. But Shmuel says, Pir'on and Knunya, I don't worry about. So then what exactly is the problem of Mishnah? Shmuel Muki Lamatznitan B'Ksha'in Chayav Modeh. He will have to say that the case in the Mishnah, at least if you explain it the way that Abaye does, is a case where the debtor does not agree to the document. Iyochi, Ke'in Ben Achrayut Nechasim Amai Yechzir. So wait a minute. If the debtor is not in agreement that the loan is outstanding, I understand why you don't give back a document with a lien in it, but then why would you give back a document even without a lien in it? Why would you give him any evidence to the creditor if the debtor says nothing happened? That from free and clear property, he still can collect. So why would you allow the creditor evidence of the fact that he can collect from this individual if the debtor says nothing ever happened? There was never a loan outstanding. Shmuel etamei. Shmuel zashitato, demar Shmuel, omer haya Rabbi Meir, shtarchov shein baot achriyut nechasim, ain govet lo mimishabde, velo mibnei chari. That Rabbi Meir believes that if you have a document that lacks a lien in it, then document is invalid, period. It does not have any efficacy in collection. That means not even for free and clear property. So Rabbi Meir believes that giving the document ban has no detrimental effect on the debtor because the creditor will not be able to collect with such a document. The document is ineffective. He says the whole point of a shtar is to get from Mishabde, is to get a lien. If the shtar doesn't have a lien in it, then the shtar is no different than a milveh al peh. The Ramban and others say that the problem here is that with an oral loan, the edim are witnesses to the fact that a loan was extended. The problem here is that if the witnesses are signing on a document that does not have a lien in it, and it's an invalid document, basically you have no witnesses to the loan anymore. Which is the problem that the document, he says, without achrayut nechasim is considered to be an improper document, or improper documentation of the loan. When the witnesses sign, they sign on something that's a piece of paper that has no meaning. And so now the witnesses are not valid witnesses. You have no witnesses to the loan anymore. So that's why they say that Shmuel in that situation will say you can return the document because it has no validity whatsoever. Rashi does ask over here, how is the Gemara even attempting to fit Shmuel into Abaye's position? Because we have a statement of Shmuel further on in the Gemara that says, Amotei shtar hakna'a b'shuk yachzir. You fired shtar hakna'a in the shuk, you give it back. Now, for Abaye, there's no distinction between a shtar hakna'a to other shtarot. So why is it that Shmuel is only saying that you return a shtar hakna'a if he's holding like Abaye? He should return any shtar because edav b'chutamav zachin lo. So the answer that Rashi gives is that there is a distinction between a shtar hakna'a and a regular shtar for Abaye, which is based on what we said before, that the only time that the edav b'chutamav actually make the shtar effective or make that the effective date is when he actually gives the shtar in the end. But if he drew up the shtar but never ended up actually lending the money, then the lien never goes into effect. That is not true in a shtar hakna'a. By a shtar hakna'a, Rashi at the top of the page says, ben yulveh, ben lo yulveh. And many people read Rashi to mean that irrespective of whether the loan is ever drawn down, the lien exists from the credit line being extended, and it's irrespective if it's drawn or not drawn. And so therefore you can always give back the shtar hakna'a. There are Rishonim, like the Ramban, who disagrees and says that only if he draws it down does it go into effect. But if he never draws it down, there is no lien there. But even given that position of the Ramban, you could still argue here that the giving back of a shtar hakna'a is not necessarily problematic. Because Shmuel doesn't worry about Pir'on, then there's a reason to give the shtar hakna'a back and assume that either the loan was extended or will be extended. In either case, the lien is not a problem of being predated. In addition, Rashi says here, why don't we just uphold the document based on the signatories to the document? When the debtor says, Anat modeh, this loan was never extended, why don't we go to the independent parties where the edim signed on the document and ask them, did you sign on this document? Did you witness such a loan? And then we can verify the fact that the loan was actually extended. So Rashi says the reason we don't do that is, Vim tomar itkayem b'chotamav, kemen shnafal itrele. The fact that it fell out of his hands is already an indication that there's something wrong with this shtar. Because otherwise the creditor would have been much more careful with the document. The fact that we're finding this document on the ground already casts aspersions on the document and gives more power to the statement of the debtor here to say that the document was falsified or is invalid. Tosfot on the Amud Bet quotes Rashi's reasoning over here and makes a distinction between the case in which the debtor is present or not present. So in a scenario where the document is found, the debtor is not present, we'll give it back to the creditor if the creditor can validate the document through the edim. Since the debtor is not here to make a claim of mizuyaf that it is falsified, we got to go to the next best thing, that is the edim. And if the edim verify it, then when the debtor comes back later and says it's mizuyaf, he will not have the power to undermine the testimony of the edim. because the riuta of it falling was already overridden by the verification through the edim, and now the tainav misuyaf of the debtor doesn't carry weight. On the other hand, if the debtor is present when the document is found, and he claims that it's mizuyaf, in that case, it'll be just the opposite. Even if we are able to verify it through edim afterwards, it will not override the claim of the debtor, because Tosfot says over here, V'kach kemen deika riuta de nefila, v'gam toen alove bevadai mizuyaf, lo yachzir, you don't give it back. K'yesh l'chol shemi yigveh miyitomim l'chokot, o shelo befanava yidei kiyum ashtar, v'kiyum enu mo'il. And the verification of the shtar through the edim doesn't work. Kishema tarach lezayif hashtar betov, actually surim edim shehichatimatan. It's such a good forgery that the edim actually think it is their signature, even though they never signed the document. So in the case where the debtor is present, that together with the fact that the document is now found away from the creditor on the ground, those two combined create a powerful enough force to stop us from using kiyum shtarot, or the kiyum through the edim, as a mechanism for verifying the shtar, and that's why we won't give it back, even though we can check with the edim. On the other hand, if they check with the edim when the debtor's not present, and therefore he was able to wipe out the riuta through the evidence of the edim, the debtor's claim later on will only come after the shtar is verified, and that won't carry the weight to determine that it is mizuyaf, according to Tosafot. So then it comes a very simple question, which is, if the document's not valid to collect with it, why bother giving it back to the creditor? What's the advantage of him holding this document? Something we've seen before, which is the minimal value over here. So again, we said before that the debtor would not keep a document around to save a couple of prutot in order to re-borrow with the document. So we said we don't worry about that. But here you're talking about an aveda. An aveda that has value. Somebody is the beneficiary of that value. Is it the debtor or is it the creditor? So we say, give it back to the creditor and he'll use it as a stopper for his jugs or whatever it is that he needs it, and he'll get that benefit, but he can't collect with it. Mar says, why are you giving it back to the creditor? Maybe the debtor should get the document and he should be able to use it as a plug. The answer is very easy. Lovehu damar lo ayu dvarim yolam. We just established that the Mishnah, according to Shmuel, if he's following Abaye's position, is a case she'ein chayav modeh, when the debtor does not agree to the fact that there was a loan extending. So why would you give the document back to him to use as a plug when he thinks that the document's false to start with? If he thinks it's false, that means it never had anything to do with him. It was done by the creditor unilaterally, and so the only person that it could possibly belong to is the creditor in this case. The debtor's denial of there ever being a loan is also a denial of the fact that the document belongs to him. Because otherwise, why is the document outstanding? He claims the document is falsified. If that's the case, then there's only one person that it should go to, and that is the creditor. Alright, so now the Gemara brings another opinion, which is Amar Rabbi Elazar. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Machloke b'she'ein chayav modeh. Elazar says our Mishnah is a machloke in a case where the debtor does not agree. To Rabbi Meir, Savar Shtar Shem Bo Achoriut Nechasim Enu Govel Lo Mimishabde Velo Bnei Pcharei. Just like we just saw in Shmuel's position, that Rabbi Meir believes that such a document is completely invalid, meaning that if you have it with Achoriut in it, we're not going to give it back, because that risks the creditor collecting from the debtor, and the debtor says nothing exists, it's never happened. And in the case where there is no Achoriut Nechasim, we give it back to him because the document's completely invalid. Can't do anything with it. Why are we giving it back to him? Again, for the benefit of using it as a plug or a stopper. So that's fine. Now, Rabbanan Savre, Rabbanan say, Migva Gavi, that you do have a right to collect with such a document. So, in the case where the debtor denies it, and now you give the document back to the creditor, in both cases, he can collect with it. With a document that has Achrayut Nechasim in it, he can collect from property that's even encumbered. If you give him back a document that doesn't have the Achriyot Nechasim in it, then he can collect from free and clear property. But either way, Beit Din will honor the document, and therefore you can't give it back, according to the Chachamim, no matter what the document says in it. Aval kishechayav modeh, but when the debtor agrees to the fact that there was a debt outstanding and he owes the money, divrei akol yachzir. Everybody says you give it back, both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. The debtor's saying it's a true document. The loan is outstanding. Please give it back to the creditor so he can collect from me. Well, obviously, the only thing you could worry about here is why not to give it back is lo chashin le pri ra'on uleknunya. Like Shmuel, he says, we don't worry about possible repayment or collusion over here. And if the debtor agrees, we give it back to the creditor, and we assume that everything is valid in this transaction. And the reasoning being the same as what Shmuel said before, which is, why are we finding this document? If there was really a repayment over here, the document should have been shredded already. The fact that it's not shredded is already good evidence of the fact that the loan is probably still outstanding. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Machloke Kesheich Ayam Modeh. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar are disagreeing over here. It's interesting that the Gemara brings Rabbi Elazar's opinion first, and then Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan is the Rebbe. Rabbi Elazar is a Talmid Chaver of Rabbi Yochanan. Generally, you would bring the position of Rabbi Yochanan first, and then the position of Rabbi Elazar. Because Rabbi Elazar's similarity to Shmuel's position, it might be that the Gemara aligned Rabbi Elazar's position next to Shmuel's position, because it really is built upon Shmuel's position. So that's probably why Rabbi Elazar's opinion was brought first here. But then Rabbi Yochanan, my machloket shechayav modeh. Machloket in the Mishnah is when the debtor agrees to the fact that the loan was outstanding. The Rabbi Meir savar shtar shein bo achriut nechasim mi mishab dehu delo gavei aval b'nei chari migavei gavei. So Rabbi Meir says, listen, the document that does not have achriut nechasim in it, he's allowed to then take from free and clear property, and that's why we give it back to him, because it won't hurt the buyers of the property. We don't have to worry about this predated shtar, because eda b'chatumav zachin lo. And so now, where he has achriyut nechasim, then we say, don't give it back, because then you're risking him going back and collecting from those people, even though maybe there was piron, maybe it was paid back, or there's knunya over here. But giving back a document without achriyut nechasim in it, you don't risk, you don't hurt any of the buyers, because the only thing you can collect from is free and clear property. On the other hand, Rabbanan Savri, Mishabde Nami Gabe, that the Rabbanan believe that even if you give back a document without a lien in it, you can still collect from encumbered property. Why is that? That is a discussion that we won't have here, but the Gemara in many places discusses this idea. Is the lack of a lien in a document, is that intentional or a mistake? And that's Rabbi Yochanan's clearly believing over here that Achriyut Nechasim is Ta'ut Sofer. It was a mistake by the Sofer. Nobody lends money without a lien. That's the basic premise, which is if you're going to lend money and you want to ensure you get your money back, you only do it with the lien. If the lien is absent from the document, that means that the guy didn't lend the money, because nobody lends money without it. So if we have a document evidencing the loan and everybody agrees there was a loan, the loan came with a lien on it, because otherwise he wouldn't have lent the money. And that's the Chachamim's position over here, why you can't give back either document, because in either case, it will hurt the buyers, because he will be able to collect from encumbered property, and we're choshesh for piron or knunya in these cases. Remember, these are interest-free loans. It's not like a bank that's making money off of you when they borrow lend the money, so they charge you a different rate for whether they have a lien or not. You're getting no interest over here. You have no way to compensate for the risk. If you're going to lend money without any compensation for the risk, what you're going to do is ensure that you have the best collateral possible, because you're not getting paid for the risk that you're taking. That's the biggest problem. Without any interest rate, without any charge for the loan, then you have no ability to assess risk through the charges or the interest rate. So that means that when you lend money, we're going to assume that you did it with the best collateralization. The nature of the way that it's lent is different. All right, Tanya Kavotei de Rabbi Yochanan. Now we have a braita that supports Rabbi Yochanan. Tiyuvta de Rabbi Elazar Bechado. It's a problem. I mean, it's a serious conflict or undermines the position of Rabbi Elazar in one way. Tiyuvta de Shmuel Betarte. And it has two problems for Shmuel's position. Again here, the next section of the Gemara is very hard to understand. You can understand what the Shitter is saying. Here, the Gemara is going to try to delve into why this Braita is supportive or not supportive. Again here, many of the Rishonim, Ramban, and others here note that the Gemara here doesn't seem to be original Gemara, but rather a addition of the Gaonim, explaining what's going on over here, and the whole idea of the count, where it says, Tiyufta Rabbi Elazar Bechado. It's not clear why there's only one question on Rabbi Elazar. Seems like there's two questions on Rabbi Elazar as well. So it's difficult with the count. You see Rashi try to combine them and say they're really one reasoning behind them, or that there's one issue. Rabbeinu Chanana already over here also mentions it, gives an explanation for Rabbi Elazar, why it's only a question in one situation and not the other. When he says, Mishum hachi amin et tiyufta de shmo betarte bar Rabbi Elazar lo shmeinen lei, da amar behedja diri akol lo chayshinen epiron, vifikach, because even though Rabbi Elazar's opinion is premised on the same conceptual idea as Shmuel, since he didn't say it explicitly, we don't ask a tiyufta on it, even though it's embedded or implicit in his position, versus Shmuel, who he says explicitly, lo chayshin on the piron, and therefore we ask two questions on Shmuel, even though there are really two questions on Rabbi Elazar as well, But since he didn't make an explicit statement, we don't bring it as a tiyufta on his position. Or the Ran suggests that maybe Rabbi Elazar could set up the situation of Eshtar Hakna'ah, and then he wouldn't have to get involved in this problem of a Cheshina Lepiron. But those Rishonim are trying to preserve the integrity of what's coming up in the Gemara, even though it's very problematic. So you could see they're trying to deal with the difficulty of the Gemara. And then you have Rishonim in the end who just say that this was a later addition to the Gemara and caused the confusion because it wasn't written at the same time. It's an addition later on trying to give interpretation to what's going on. This is the Braita. Motza Shtarichov, find Shtarichov, Yesh Ben Achoriyud Nechassim. And it has a lien in it. Afo Pishi Shnei Modim, so it's a case of Chayav Modeh, even though they both agree to it, Lo Yachzir, Lo Lezeh, V'lo Lezeh. Don't return it to either party. Ein Bayan Achoriyud Nechassim, on the other hand, if it's missing Achoriyud Nechassim, there's no lien in it, Bizman Shaloveh Modeh, in the case when it's Chayav Modeh, when the debtor agrees to it, Yachzir L'malveh, you give it back to the creditor. Ein Aloveh Modeh, in the case where he disagrees, Lo yachzir lo lezeh v'lo lezeh, divrei Rabbi Meir. This is exactly Rabbi Yochanan's position. Rabbi Yochanan's position is that the machloket is b'chayav modeh, is when the debtor agrees to the fact that there is a loan outstanding. And that's the case here, that the loveh is modeh. So now when he's modeh, Rabbi Meir makes a distinction in his position. He says, give it back if it doesn't have a lien. Don't give it back if it has a lien. The Chachamim say don't give it back in either case. It's exactly what the Braita is saying. Divrei Rabbi Meir, Shaya Rabbi Meir Omer, Shtarei Chov, Sheish Ben Achoriyut Nechassim, Goveh Nechassim Mishubadim. The reason being, the same thing that Rabbi Yochanan said, is that the reason you give back a document that has a lien in it is because you don't give back a document with a lien in it is because you can go after the buyers. You can go after encumbered property. Shein Ben Achoriyut Nechassim, if it's lacking a lien in it, Goveh Nechassim Bnei Chorin. You only can collect from free and clear property, so if the debtor wants to admit and put his money or his property at risk, that's his problem. He doesn't affect any third parties. So that's fine. We're okay with him giving back the document. No matter what the document says in it, whether it has a lien or not, as a taut sofer, and it has a lien in it no matter what, and therefore you could be goveh from encumbered property, and you would not allow the finder to give it back to the creditor in either instance, because then the creditor gets rights, not only against the debtor, but against the other parties that bought property. And that would be a problem. We're worried about the fact that he might be collecting it improperly from those buyers. So that's very supportive of Rabbi Yochanan. Says exactly what Rabbi Yochanan says. Now, to Yufta, the Rabbi Elazar Bechad. So it's a question on Rabbi Elazar in one instance. The Amar, the Rabbi Meir, Shtar Shein Bo Achrayut Nechassim, Eino Goveh Nechassim Meshubedim, Velo Nechassim Bnei Chorin. He says, according to Rabbi Meir, you can't collect from anything when you have a document that does not have a lien in it. Because Rabbi Elazar said that the machloket is in a case of ein chayav modeh, when the debtor does not agree to the loan. But in the case where the debtor agrees to the loan, then we said over here, avach shchayav modeh, divrei kol yachzir. Everybody should give it back. But over here you have a case of chayav modeh, and the way the Braita reads is that Rabbi Meir says you could collect from free and clear property when it comes to a shtar that does not have a lien in it. So that's the first problem. But the problem, now here's the problem in the Gemara, which is now, they said, oh, it's a question of Rabbi Elazar in one way. Well, first of all, we've already asked one question on Rabbi Elazar, and now they bring a second question. Become on, Rabbi Elazar also said, ben the Rabbi Meir, ben the Rabbanan, lo chayshin in l'knunya. We don't worry about collusion. The whole reason we allow you to give the document back, according to Rabbi Elazar, is because we don't worry about collusion or repayment of the loan. So if that's the case, the Braita makes it clear that we are worried about that, and we don't allow the documents to go back. The Braita is indicative of the fact that we do worry about Knunya, because in a case where it is a document with a lien in it, we don't allow you to give the document back, even when the debtor agrees to it, because of this problem of collusion. Even though they both agree to it, lo yakzir, lo lezeh, lo lezeh. Alma chashin in the Knunya. You told me that was a question on Rabbi Elazar in one way, now you bring me two things that are problematic. It says, Chadahu de Chatamhu. It's really one because it's one reason behind it. Mishum de Kamar Rabbi Elazar, Machloka Kashain Chayab Modehu, because he establishes the Mishnah as a case where the debtor does not agree, that precipitates his position, which is interesting. It's almost backwards, which it says that these aren't Rabbi Elazar's opinions, but rather, he believes the Mishnah is this way. Once you believe the Mishnah is that way, here are your outputs. This has to be the scenario. When you say the Mishnah is a case when en chayav modeh, when the debtor doesn't agree, then you must believe the following things. Rabbi Meir thinks that a document that does not have a lien in it, you cannot collect anything with it. And number two is you have to believe that we are not choshesh leknunya. Those are two outcomes of having such a position. So those are both problematic with the Braita. It's the one position that does that. But the problem is that it seems backwards. It's almost counterintuitive. You would have thought that the core issue is, do you worry about Kanunya or do you not worry about Kanunya? Do you think Rabbi Meir thinks you can collect with such a star or not a star? From that, then you would back into explaining our Mishnah as Chayav Modeh Shel Ein Chayav Modeh. The Gemara here turns it on its head and says, oh, that's the explanation of the Mishnah, therefore you get these outputs, and you get these major issues, which are things that you would expect someone to take a stand on, which is, do we worry about collusion or we don't worry about collusion? That would be something that you think they'd have a position about. Does Rabbi Meir think you could collect from B'nai Charei when you have a duck without a lien in it? That's a position that you think the Amora would take. Now we're saying, no, he didn't take those positions. He just explained our Mishnah that the debtor didn't agree, and then these are fallout from that explanation. So it seems almost backwards that it's not that his logic or his positions then generate a need to explain the Mishnah in this way. No, he explained the Mishnah this way, therefore he gets these positions. So that's why the Gemara answers in the end. It's a very difficult answer, and again, that's why some of the Rishonim think that this was a later addition to the Gemara. It's clear that the Bright is problematic for Rabbi Elazar, but it's probably problematic because it's against his core positions, and that's why it's problematic, not because of this one issue that outputs these positions. The Gemara says, to Yufta the Shmuel Batarte, it's problematic or undermines Shmuel's position in two ways. Chada ke Rabbi Elazar. One is like Rabbi Elazar, da muki matnita and kashen chayab modeh. V'chada da mar Shmuel, matzah shtar hakna'a, b'shuk, yakzir l'bailim, v'lo chayshinan lipir own. So that the other part of Shmuel's position is that if you find a shtar hakna'a in the shuk, you give it back to the Balim, because the shtar hakna'a, according to Shmuel, we don't worry about predating, because the shtar hakna'a is a credit line that gives you the right of a lien from that earlier time. So we're not worried about the predating. The only thing you would be worried about is repayment. Shmuel is not choshesh for repayment. So that's the additional problem. L'cheshin l'pirion, tiyufta. Tektani hochi, because our Braita says, afal pishne shteim modim. Even if they both agree, lo yakzir lo lezeh v'lo lezeh, you don't give it back. Meaning, Alma, Chayshin on the Piron. We do worry about the possibility of repayment, even when both people agree that the loan is outstanding. Certainly in the case where the Lovet doesn't agree, Chayshin on the Piron, we definitely would be worried about the Piron over here. So now, again, this is also difficult in the explanation, only because Shmuel's position is, Ein Chayshin the Piron, Ulekun Nunya. Now what we did was we just separated them out and said, oh, Rabbi Lazar's question is an issue of kanunya, of collusion, and then Shmuel's position about Piron is also a problem. But the truth is that Rabbi Lazar also has to worry about kanunya based on his position that he's following Shmuel, that once you say that it's a case of Ein Chayav Modeh, that he doesn't agree to it, that means when Chayav Modeh, when the debtor agrees to it, we give back the document, that means that he's not Choshesh the Piron. The fact that we allow you when both parties agree to give it back shows you that we don't worry about Kanunya, but we also don't worry about Piron. So he has to hold on both of those. So why are you separating out Rabbi Elazar from Shmuel, when in the end, Rabbi Elazar and Shmuel's position seem to be identical? So why is it more of a question on Shmuel than it is on Rabbi Elazar? It really is the same question on both parties. For that reason, it's difficult to understand the flow of the Gemara, but nevertheless, in a big picture sense, we understand what's happening here. The Braita clearly undermines the position of Shmuel and Rabbi Elazar, because the Braita obviously believes that we are Choshesh the Piron and Choshin the Knunya. We worry about the possibility of a repayment, and we worry about the possibility of collusion. Both of those don't allow Shmuel or Rabbi Elazar's positions to get off the ground, and therefore the explanation of the Mishnah that they gave will not accord with the Braita, and you have to then follow the position of Rabbi Yochanan or the possibility of using Abaye's position, which might fit in. Okay, we're going to stop here, 10 lines down on the top of Yudalad Amud Aleph.